This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. It's hard to imagine now, but during the great days of sail in the 18th and early 19th centuries, coastal towns around Britain were riddled with fear of the press gang. The nation's island status, combined with its vigorous enthusiasm for going to war, created a need for lots of warships. Which was great if you were into warships, but the thing with having lots of warships was you needed lots of people to crew them. Considerably more people than were prepared to volunteer. The life of an ordinary sailor in the 18th century Navy wasn't exactly one with prospects. Conditions on board ship were usually pretty grim. Scurvy and disease were rife. Naval pay was often as much as 2 years in arrears. Even when it finally arrived, you weren't exactly lighting big cigars with £5 notes. When sailors mutinied over conditions at Spithead in 1797, it led to the first pay rise in 140 years. And all that's before we even consider the very real possibility of having your head removed by a cannonball when you'd least expect it. Hence, the Navy had to resort to more direct recruiting methods than colourful brochures and a plate of biscuits. Some might call it kidnap, or abduction, even people trafficking. But the Navy called it impressment. The groups of naval seamen charged with implementing this drastic form of career change became known as press gangs. And they were terrifying, particularly if you were an eligible man of seafaring habits between the ages of 18 and 55 years, as the regulations put it. The sheer number of sailors required for the Navy meant these gangs were prolific and undiscerning. They were effective too. Of the 120,000 men in the Navy at the time of the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805, half of them had been rounded up by press gangs. That's 60,000 people. Fear of impressment was so serious that a rumour of a press gang's arrival could see merchant ships and fishing vessels remaining offshore, turning ports and harbours into ghost towns. And people ashore would take drastic measures to avoid impressment. In March 1716, a press gang on the Strand in London got wind of a sailor staying in a lodging house overlooking the Thames. Hearing the clump of boots on the stairs, the sailor jumped out of the window into the river and was drowned. Fights were commonplace, often turning into mass brawls between the gangs and those seeking to prevent the kidnap of their own, and sometimes there were fatal consequences. The spring of 1803 saw what was called a hot press, when so many men were needed, and urgently, the gangs could legally grab any able-bodied man, seaman or not. HMS L'Aigle moored off Portland in Dorset and attempted a mass abduction of quarrymen from the island's stone yards. They were met in the square at Easton by angry Portlanders, and a struggle ensued. Shots were fired, and when the dust had settled, three Portland men lay dead. A young woman, Mary Way, also died later from gunshot wounds. The L'Aigle's captain, George Wolfe, and two other members of the press gang were indicted for murder by local magistrates, but the government intervened to see that all the charges were dropped. The press gang largely disappeared after the end of the Napoleonic Wars, so it's hard now to imagine the fear that spread through towns and cities when word went out that the gangs were approaching. It must have felt like an invasion of bandits, people vanishing into their own homes, locking themselves in, grown men finding hiding places as the streets became deserted. There can't have been anything like it in Britain since the end of the Viking raids. Scary times then, thankfully long gone now. So I'll leave you with three of my favourite press gang stories. In 1796, a supply ship called the Daedalus called at Tahiti on its way back to London from Port Jackson, now Sydney Harbour. When the crew went ashore, they were surprised to find 9 Englishmen, heavily tattooed in the Pacific Island style, and living in great comfort, with wives, and in some cases, young children. They were, they said, crew members from a whaler called the Amelia, that had struck rocks offshore and sunk, forcing them to seek refuge among the islanders. The men were so happy with their lot that when offered the chance to return to England, all but one of them declined. As soon as Tahiti had disappeared over the horizon, even he began to regret giving up his life on the island paradise. His one consolation was that he would see his family and friends again. When the Daedalus arrived at the Nore in the Thames estuary, as soon as the man and the rest of the ship's crew had stepped ashore, they were set upon by a press gang, and the whole lot of them carted off to a warship for a new life in the Navy. In March 1726, a labourer was walking to work across Blackheath, close to the Thames in south-east London, when he was stopped by a press gang of 4 men. He pleaded with them that he was a family man, the breadwinner, and offered them all the money he had, a guinea and 3 shillings, if they let him go. The men looked at each other, nodded, trousered the cash, and left him to it. 15 minutes later, the labourer was accosted by another press gang. When he bewailed his ill fortune at being pressed twice in the space of a quarter of an hour, the lieutenant sent his men off to find the first gang. They found them in the nearest pub, getting royally hammered on the labourer's money. They weren't a press gang at all, they were just at it. What must have seemed a terrific wheeze at the time backfired spectacularly. The men were told to hand over the money and were then themselves bundled off to the nearest warship for a new life in the Navy. The labourer got his money back and was sent on his way. In 1809, 2 young men named Miller and Brown were competing for the affections of a maidservant in the Hatton Garden area of London. The rivalry grew so heated, the impassioned suitors decided the only way to sort things out was in the time-honoured manner of a punch-up. Especially when the woman in question made it known that the winner of the encounter would secure her hand. The lovesick pugilists arranged to meet on an agreed date at Copenhagen Fields to slug it out in the name of Cupid. Somehow, word of the ding-dong filtered through to the recruiting officer of a nearby press gang, who, when the fight was nearing its climax and both men were battered and bloody, arrived with the press gang and carted Miller and Brown away. Once the men had been hauled away to become jolly Jack Tars in the service of the Navy, the recruiting officer and the maidservant fell into each other's arms, as planned. That was A Coastal Story, and I'm Charlie Connolly. If you're enjoying these stories, do please rate and review if that's something your podcast platform offers. If it doesn't, well, maybe scratch it on the back of a bus seat, or go into shops and slip ringing endorsements inside books, or magazines, or 4 packs of tin tomatoes. That'd be great. Thanks a million. I do appreciate everyone who's enjoyed Coastal Stories enough to buy the podcast a pint. Or in some cases, more than a pint. It really helps keep this thing up and running, and I know there are many demands tugging at your wallet these days. If you'd like to join the Pint Buying Club, then the link enabling you to do so is in the notes accompanying this and every episode. You can also find it on the podcast Twitter account, which is at Podcast Coastal. That's at Podcast Coastal. These waves you can hear aren't just in your head. They were recorded at Deal in the sunshine after the partial eclipse on the 10th of June 2021.